Chapter 14. Master T, you've returned, LS says, offering Shock a smile. That was a very quick trip to Coruscant. Shock returns the smile, folding her hands into her sleeves as she comes to a stop. The council met promptly, thankfully. It was not a trip for pleasure. LS shakes his head, but he falls into step with her as she leaves the landing platform. You Jedi rarely do anything for pleasure, I've noticed. Perhaps you would benefit from it. At Shock's shoulder, Colt stiffens faintly, but Shock doesn't glance back. She knows, LS, and it wasn't meant to be an inappropriate comment. A Jedi chooses to serve others, not themselves, LS. I'm quite happy as I am. Ugh, I meant no disrespect, Master T, LS says, lifting his hands. It's good to see you back, but I worry for you Jedi sometimes. For a mercenary and a bounty hunter, LS has always struck Shock as a kind soul. She chuckles, raising a hand to hide it, and returns. I appreciate your concern, but truly, my duty occupies me well enough. How is the new batch of cadets? The Akrona's expression slants into something wry. They're advancing, he says. Slowly, I'm afraid. Brick is not pleased, but I believe they have potential. He glances sideways at her, then over at Colt, and says, one of the squads is in medical for a check as we speak, if you'd like to meet them. Shock considers that for a moment. The flight was long, and Aegon is likely close behind her, traveling from Nar Shaddaa as he is. She should be at hand to greet him when he arrives, because Aegon is a brusque man and the Kaminoans care quite a lot about niceties, but... She thinks of what Mace said in the hangar, thinks of his moment of clarity despite the clouding of the Force, and Colt's words about modifications made to the clones, modifications the Kaminoans won't reveal despite her asking. In the darkness, without a clear direction to walk, any step is a step forward. Shall we? She asks Colt with a smile, and he raises a brow at her but nods. If you'd like, General, he says. I'm always up to pick on some shinies. Commander, she chides, amused, and the curl of Colt's lips says he knows she doesn't mean it. LS chuckles softly. I believe this squad in particular could use some polishing, he says tactfully. They're not quite Domino Squad, but there are some unique personalities to accommodate. Oh my, Shock says, hiding a laugh. It will be an interesting few weeks then. Quite, LS agrees, shaking his head. He leads the way to the lift, murmuring their destination as it starts to move, and looks out over Kamino's stormy seas for a long moment. Shock can feel that he wants to say something, but she doesn't push. Just folds her hands in front of herself and waits patiently. After a moment, LS casts her a look, and Akrona features are hard to read, but Shock can feel his flicker of tolerant bemusement. You Jedi would make decent interrogators, he says, and looks away again. Have you heard news of Domino Squad? Shock has, because she went looking. She sees developments, but briefly, for thousands of clones each time they ship out. Domino was something special, though, something different. She'd thought to keep an eye on them as they worked up through the ranks, made ARC troopers, went on, but... This is a war, and no war has ever been kind, particularly not to hopes for the future. Yes, she says quietly, and feels Colt shift ever so slightly closer, his shoulder brushing hers. They were stationed at the Rishi moon base, guarding the approach to Kamino. The base was attacked, and cut up and droid bait were killed. Heavy, her throat closes, and it takes her a moment to feel out the edges of her grief, to acknowledge it, to let it bleed back into the force. Heavy sacrificed himself to take out the base so the fleet would realize there was an attack. Colt leans into her, just enough for her to feel the steady weight of him, offering comfort, and Shock closes her eyes. He's kind. All of the clones are so very kind. For a long, long moment, Alas is silent. Then quietly he sighs, folding his arms over his chest. "I'd hoped," he says, and cuts himself off with a shake of his head. "No matter. The other two, Echo and Fives?" "With the 501st under Master Anakin Skywalker," Shock says, which is at least slightly happier news. "I am sure they will go on to great things." "If they're given a chance," Ellis agrees, and as the lift comes to a stop, he steps out. "Excuse me, Master T, but I think I'll leave you to find your way to the medbay on your own." Shock inclines her head to him. "I hope the night brings you peace, Alas," she murmurs, and Alas nods in return, then leaves with quick steps. Shock watches him go, her heart heavy, and breathes out long and slow. "I remember the names of far too many dead," she says into the silent corridor. "Sometimes I wonder how many I will be able to remember before I start to forget." "As many as you need to until this war is over, General," Colt says gruffly, but not unkindly. "You're not the kind of person to forget a trooper." "Just the kind to send them off to their deaths," Shock agrees sadly, and turns. Before she can step away, though, a hand touches her arm. Not quite a hold, but intended for the same purpose. "General," Colt says, and moves to face her. "The Jedi didn't start this war." Shock thinks of saying, "But we haven't finished it." Thinks of saying, "We shouldn't have participated in it." Thinks of saying, "But we weren't able to prevent it." Except that the Jedi have been fighting since the beginning, even the Padawans. Except they couldn't have endured the loss of innocent life that would have come if they abstained. Except there are only a few thousand Jedi in a whole hostile galaxy, and they refuse to force their will on others, but it means they can never quite stem the tides of corruption. "No," she finally says, and lays her hand over Colt's. "But I, for one, hope we can end it soon." "All of us, sir," Colt agrees, and lets go. Shock watches him step back, then straightens her shoulders, lifts her head, and keeps moving. The medbays are set back in a curve of the long, sweeping building, windows spilling storm gray light across the floors until the wash of artificial light takes over. Normally, Shock might give warning that she was entering, but right now the door stands open, so she slips in, Colt on her heels. A med droid bobs in greeting but doesn't pause, and Shock takes a moment to look over the room. Five clones are present, and Shock can hear the three furthest from the door arguing lightly. The other two, though. One looks resigned to the procedures, sitting on his bed with a datapad. But a clone with long, curly hair, tangled and pulled back in a tail, flinches when a droid pokes at him, and Shock can't stop herself. "Hello there," she says, makes it warm and friendly as she crosses the floor to meet them. "You must be the new squad Alas was telling me about." The long-haired clone jerks his head up, and the other one drops his pad, eyes widening sharply. "General," he says, scrambling like he's going to get to his feet. Shock raises her hands, stilling him. "I'm sorry for the surprise, cadets," she says, offering them both a smile. "I was away when you started training, but I wanted to see you as soon as I returned." The two clones trade looks, And the long-haired one says carefully, "See us, General?" "Of course," Shock says gently, and bows to them, hands clasped in front of her. "I am Jedi Master Shakti. It's an honor to meet you, cadets." Eyes widen. The first one swallows, but gives her a salute. "Cadet Dogma, General, it's an honor." Tup, the long-haired clone offers after a startled second. "I'm Cadet Tup." "Tup and Dogma," Shock echoes, committing them to memory, and smiles at the two. Before she can say anything else, though, a med droid buzzes over, beeping at Dogma urgently, and he flicks Shock an alarmed look. "I will see you again, Cadet Dogma," Shock promises, amused. "Please, do not let me interfere." "Sorry, General," Dogma says sheepishly, but slides off his bed and follows the droid into another room. In the silence that rises in his wake, Shock regards Tup, who seems like he doesn't know quite what to say, and makes Shock regret her position just a little, because no cadet will ever feel easy in her presence. "Tup," she says, and when he looks at her, she smiles. "I have not seen many clones grow their hair so long. It's quite pretty." Tup smiles just a little and reaches up to touch the tail of his hair. "I like it," he says. "Gets in the way sometimes, but it's mine, you know?" Because nothing else is, just the armor to be customized and the changes he can make to his own face. Shock herself owns only her robes, her lightsaber, and her headdress. But that was her own choice. The clones never chose this. "May I?" she asks, raising a hand. Tup flashes her a startled glance, but nods willingly. And Shock steps closer, touching the very edge of his curls. "Ah," she says, delighted. "It's soft." Tup eyes her Leku, then smiles. "Guess you don't have to deal with hair much, General," he says, and then freezes like he just said something wrong. Shock just chuckles. "No," she agrees warmly. "I do not. But I had human Padawans, and I always enjoyed caring for their hair when they were small." She doesn't let the flicker of well-aged grief catch her. At the memory, both of her students are dead, murdered in the course of their service for the Order. And while she mourns them, while she could have done better for them, right now is not the time to dwell. "Perhaps," she says, letting go of those thoughts. "Pulling it up instead of back would be easier." Tup blinks, glancing up at her. "General?" "To fit under a helmet," Shock clarifies, smiling at him. "Perhaps a bun, right where the helmets have extra room." Tup glances at her, then coughs. If you've done it before, you could show me, General?" he asks, then twitches guiltily. "If you've got time, sir, I can, alone, I mean..." "Oh," Shock says, startled but delighted. "Yes, I did such things for Fuh several times. If you would permit me, Tup, I would be honored." Tup flushes, but nods. It's all tangled right now," he says. "We were in training." "That's all right. I'm sure we can find a brush." Shock touches his shoulder lightly and feels like an echoing crash, the sound of a blaster from right beside her, a surge of pain, darkness. "Could soldiers follow orders?" a voice whispers, ragged. Deliberately, carefully, Shock steps back. "I'll ask the droids," she says, and the fact that she can keep her voice even is a blessing. "One moment, Tup." Colt is watching her from the doorway, eyes narrowed. As Shock steps away from Tup's bed, he crosses the room to reach her, touching her wrist. "General?" he asks, sharp. Shock presses her fingers over his for just a moment, relieved beyond words that she feels nothing from him beyond bright concern. "Something's wrong," she says softly, and her voice wants to shake, but she won't let it. Holds on with an iron will until the vision fades around the edges. "Something is going to happen to Tup. Something terrible." "It's war, General," Colt says, not unsympathetic. Shock shakes her head. "Not like that," she says. "Not. He's going to lose himself, and terrible things will come of it." Colt studies her face, then nods curtly. "You want to watch him," he says. It's hard to know what she wants to do. Shock folds her hands in front of her, closing her eyes, and breathes out. Reaches for the Force, forever their greatest guide, and a touch, an urge, pushing her in the right direction, like a lighthouse in a storm or a track in the grasslands leading towards her prey. "Excuse me," she says to the med droid that was by Tup's bed earlier, and it comes to a stop, turning to look at her. "May I ask if you are overseeing the care of Cadet Tup?" "Yes, General T," it answers. "I am AZI 3452118624698721347. I am in charge of testing for this squad, including CT-5385. That's quite the mouthful, as far as designations go. Shock hides a small smile and says, "Please forgive me for the imposition, but I was hoping you could assist me. The Force gives me a sense that something is wrong with Cadet Tup, but it has not manifested physically yet. Could you see if there is anything that regular scans would not pick up? His squad as well, if possible." The droid looks at her curiously. "Very well, General T," it allows. "I will schedule them immediately. Is there anything else?" Shock hesitates, but then inclines her head. "Please restrict knowledge of these tests to myself and Commander Colt," she says. "And is there a hairbrush anywhere in the facilities?" If the droid thinks it's an odd request, it doesn't show it. "Yes, General, I will retrieve one for you. One moment, please." As it floats away, Colt glances sideways at her, one hand resting close to his belt. To his blaster as well, though it's not overt. Shock can only just feel the buzz of tension in his frame. "General," he says lowly, "that's not exactly subtle. If the Kaminoans catch wind of it..." "No," Shock agrees. "But they have obstructed us at every turn. If they take issue with my actions, I will say that it was their reticence that prompted them." She gives Colt a wry smile. "This is the right thing to do, Commander. It will lead us to the answer." Colt frowns, but inclines his head. "If you're sure, General, you don't want to wait until the other Jedi gets here?" "Egan is close," Shock acknowledges, "but his talents lie in different areas." With a quiet snort, Colt glances at her. "Not quite as charming as you, General?" Shock laughs softly. "Egan's greatest charm is his skill with a lightsaber," she says amused. "He is a great warrior and a wise man, just brusque." "Might make a nice change," Colt says, on the edge of teasing, for all his expression is perfectly serious. "If you'll pardon me for saying so, General, sometimes you Jedi talk too much." With a chuckle, Shock folds her hands into her sleeves. She smiles at the med droid as it nears, taking the hairbrush from its claws. "Thank you." "You're welcome, General," the droid returns. "I will begin testing the squad tomorrow. Would you like to be present to oversee?" Shock has duties, but The cadets will likely be alarmed at such a thorough battery of tests, and she wants to be able to reassure them. Yes, she confirms. Thank you. It is much appreciated. The droid cocks its head at her. The clone troopers are Republic property, and you are the representative of the Republic, it says. Your requests are to be taken as orders. Property. Shock doesn't let her expression waver, even as a thread of something close to anger rises, aimed at other powers rather than this one droid. Just bows instead and turns, heading back to Tup and letting her expression slide into a more neutral smile. Forgive the delay, Tup, she says, and carefully takes a seat on the edge of his bed. If you would still like me to do this. Tup flushes, casting a look at Colt that's mildly nervous, but says, Yes, General T, if you don't mind. Of course not, Shock says firmly. And as he turns to give her his back, she reaches up, carefully undoing the strip of cloth that looks cut from a training uniform. Then, gently, she starts untangling the curls, easing them loose from their twist. Fersun's hair hadn't been quite the same texture, but her first Padawan's was, at least, full of waves, and the familiarity lends ease to her motions. Deliberate, at ease, Colt leans back against the wall beside the bed, eyes sweeping the room, and Shock wonders if she's the only one who can see how close his hand is to his blaster, even in a place that's supposed to be safe. She doesn't comment, though, just focuses on Tup, on the gradual fading of tension from his shoulders as she teases the knots out carefully. A good soldier follows orders. His voice whispers in her memory, hitching, terrified, exhausted. Shock's heart aches, and she forces herself to focus, to think, to let worry go, at least for now, at least until tomorrow. I like to think that Togruta understand what it is to decorate oneself with marks of individuality, even as part of a larger whole, she says softly. On my home planet, one of the greatest rituals is the hunting of an Akul. It is a very old tradition among the Togruta, and very highly revered. Only those who hunt an Akul and kill it are permitted to wear its teeth. We treat it as a rite of passage, to hunt a beast that normally hunts us. Tup makes to glance over his shoulder at her, then freezes. Is that headdress that you're wearing, sir? He asks. Shock hums. It is indeed. I returned to my homeworld when I was made a knight, at just 20 years, just so I could have my own hunt. Would you like to hear the story of it? Yes, sir, Tup says quickly. Your planet's Shili, right? It is. Shock agrees, warm. It is a beautiful place, with many long stretches of scrubland and deep forest valleys. We are hunters by nature, even in these days. And though we have cities, many of us still live in tribes, roaming the scrubland. She pauses, working out a particularly stubborn knot, and smiles. It was there that a Jedi found me when I was a child. And it was there I returned when I was a knight. Colt is listening too, gaze flickering to her in between careful scans of the room, and Shock doesn't let her voice waver, spinning out the tale of her hunt until all of the tension has bled from both clones, and the air rests easy around her again. The Force is still whispering warnings, but they're quieter now, less vicious. Shock catalogs each one, then sets it aside to share with Agen and Colt later. For now, this will do. Shock couldn't save her Padawans, can't save the deployed clones from their deaths, but there's a murmur at the edge of the Force that there's a path that will let her save Tup, and she'll walk it as far as she possibly can. The misting rain doesn't abate with whatever sort of sunrise comes to this planet. It's still dim and the thunder doesn't fade, but there's more light than before. Fewer swallowing shadows beneath the trees. Cody doesn't like the lack of visibility as they make their way through the next valley, and he likes the sucking mud left over from the downpour even less. There's not much to do but slog through it, though, following the overgrown road as it dips in and out of the swampy ground. Whatever this planet is, it's rapidly inching up in his ranking of least favorite places. Might already be at the top, even, if he's being truthful. About the only saving grace is the fact that nothing else has tried to eat them on their march. Well, yet. Cody's not that hopeful about the trend continuing. Isn't it kind of weird, though? Fives asks. He's been talking for a while, but since it's mainly to kicks, Cody hasn't bothered really paying attention. Not beyond a few sideways glances at the way Fives is dressed. Bits and pieces of plastoid armor with a Jedi robe on top. It should look ridiculous, but somehow he's managing to make it look acceptable. Cody's putting it down to the fact that even Mace's clothes reject all accusations of absurdity with cool dignity. Fives certainly doesn't have much dignity of his own. Kix doesn't sigh, which is better than Cody would have done. It's not that weird, he says. You know the 91st loves him. Yeah, but loving the fact that Mace Windu is your Jedi General is different than him being, you know, nice, Fives protests, and Cody wants to roll his eyes. And he's really nice. Why does no one say that? Well, that's at least slightly better than how Cody was expecting this conversation to go. Do you really think General Windu wants people calling him nice? Kix asks dryly. He might just not let most people know. Cody looks ahead of them, to where Mace and Anakin are very determinedly not speaking. Or, well, to where Anakin is moodily ignoring Mace, and Mace is apparently unconcerned by this fit of petulance. Cody had wanted to put the Jedi right in the middle of the group, but with the Vornskr's attack, Mace had insisted that they would take the lead. Like bait. And Cody doesn't like that. He's got his blaster rifle close at hand, though, and an eye on the trees. If anything so much as twitches, it's getting shot. But he is, Fives insists. It's the truth. He's the one who killed the original, Kix says after a moment. Even if he is, that's going to be the first thing anyone thinks of. He's the Order's champion, and he managed to kill the Jedi killer. Wonder how Commander Pons took the news that that was who he got, Fives muses. It's Commander Pons, Kix says dryly. Probably well. Boring, Fives mutters, then asks, did you know Jedi can see ghosts? Really? Kix asks, startled. Like souls of the dead? Ghosts? Fives shrugs. I guess so. General Windu told me so himself. Cody didn't know that. He tamps down a flicker of mild irritation, picking up his pace slightly, and sidesteps a curve in the path to catch up with Mace. When he falls into step, Mace gives him a sideways look, but doesn't protest. Chatter? He asks instead. Cody sighs at his amused tone. At least they're not Waxer and Boyle, he says optimistically, and Mace snorts. Cody lets the comfortable quiet settle for a long moment, then glances ahead of them, at the rise of another hill, and asks, any idea how far we are from anything? Mace shakes his head. The valleys make it hard to see the horizon, he says, and to judge distance. If there are other mines near us, though, they're well hidden. Hopefully there aren't any in that case. Cody hates skilled enemies. The stupid ones are a hell of a lot easier to deal with. How far can you sense? He asks.
It depends, Mace says. On the place, on the minds that are there to sense, on how strongly the Force shows through there. This planet...
He pauses, frowning.
It's strong in the Force, but there's something wrong with it.
The Sith? Cody offers. Mace inclines his head.
I believe so. Too many centuries of dark emotions left to fester, of people using the Force for selfish purposes.
Cody considers that for a moment, weighing something he's wanted to ask Obi-Wan for a while now. When you talk about the dark side, he says, finally, carefully, what does that mean? A dark power, or something that's the opposite of what you use, or... Ahead of them, Anakin turns his head just faintly, like he's listening, but pretending not to.
The Force is energy that connects everything, Mace says. What I use and what the Sith Lord uses. There's no difference except in how.
He turns his head, glancing over his shoulder, and Cody looks too. Finds Fives creeping up to listen with an exasperated Kix right behind him, and kind of wants to roll his eyes. Mace doesn't seem to mind, though. He just faces forward again and asks,
Do you know the Jedi Code?
Cody blinks, caught off guard. That's no emotion, no attachment, right? For a long moment, Mace doesn't answer.
A part of it,
he finally allows.
But in each phrase's entirety, they are. There is no emotion. There is peace. There is no passion. There is serenity. If a Jedi loses control, uses their connection to the Force, to harm out of vengeance, or lets themselves be led astray from helping others out of a selfishness to keep what is theirs, that is the dark side. It is the opposite of the code and the opposite of what Jedi do.
Before the marriage, Cody likely would have said Mace was emotionless. Might have called him cold. Serenity, though. That's a better word for it. A carefully structured sort of serenity. But he's not emotionless, that's for certain.
Emotions trip you up in a firefight, too, he says after a moment. Mace's mouth curves just slightly. Yes. However, when a Jedi loses control... We have a tendency to crack durasteel and levitate sharp objects without meaning to. Control is a practical thing, but it served us well as diplomats.
Not that they're diplomats anymore. Generals now. And Cody looks away.
It'll serve you again, he says, even though he's not entirely sure he believes it. Yes,
Mace says quietly. Though Cody can't tell whether he agrees or not.
When the war is over.
The words don't feel like they once did. Cody keeps his eyes forward, trying to pinpoint the difference. Maybe once, when the war is over, meant uncertainty, the fear that the clones would all just be decommissioned. But now,
it can't come too soon, Cody says, and means it.
Mace pauses, casting him a look, and there's something in his face that Cody can't read.
You sound as though you already have plans,
he says, more invitation to share them than any sort of tease. Cody has thought about it, of course, has considered and dreamed, but now it's a reality, almost. Yeah, he says, smiling a little. I'm going to find a nice bed and sleep for a week straight, and then find a mountaintop somewhere and just sit for a while. Rex calls him boring when he says that. Talks about bars and benders and cities all across the galaxy he wants to visit, but Mace doesn't. Just smiles very faintly and says,
That sounds very much like my own plans.
Cody chuckles.
Most mountaintops are big enough for two, he offers. Most beds as well, Mace says gravely. And behind them, Fives chokes, suddenly and desperately. Cody's getting rather fond of causing that kind of reaction. Grinning, he tells Mace, careful there, people might think we're married. I thought the rings gave it away. Mace's tone is perfectly deadpan, but ahead of them, Cody groans and humor curls in Mace's gaze. Unless there's something you aren't telling me, Cody. You're the one who filed the paperwork, Cody counters. Married? Five squawks. In illustration, Cody tugs off a glove and holds up a hand, very clearly showing the ring he's wearing. Thought Rex had told people, he says, perfectly mild. It's not like we were keeping it a secret.
Only from Master Obi-Wan,
Anakin mutters. You are welcome to tell him if you'd like, Mace says courteously, and Anakin shoots him a look that's absolutely full of horror. In response, Mace just raises an eyebrow, point made, and Anakin rolls his eyes and looks away again. Chuckling, Cody pulls his glove back on and resettles his blaster. Maybe we can tell him when we find comm equipment, he suggests. Motivate him to come find us faster.
For the purposes of murder, yes, Mace says dryly.
I'll protect him from you, Cody tells him. Pinky swear. Mace snorts something but doesn't argue. Looks up the trail instead and asks,
would you be willing to tell me something about Kamino?
Kamino? Cody frowns, not entirely sure where the question came from. Sure.
I've been wondering why there are no records that the Force has manifested in the clones.
Mace says, quietly enough that it's mostly private.
Even small talents for it appear in one of every few hundred thousand sentients. But no clone has a registered midichlorian count.
It takes a second for Cody to digest the question. A moment longer for him to parse it out.
I don't think we were ever tested, he says, a little bewildered.
If we're all clones of one man who couldn't use the Force, isn't it logical that none of us could?
There are variations between clones, Mace points out, hair color and eye color particularly. There's no reason midichlorian count couldn't also differ.
He's silent for a moment, and then says,
most sentients test their children in the Republic, but Kamino isn't part of the Republic yet.
Can't imagine the Kaminoans would want to either, Cody says quietly. Do the testing, I mean. If a clone became a Jedi?
Mace smiles, just enough for Cody to catch it. A chaotic situation, he allows. Clones might have to be treated as something other than property, then.
That doesn't sound like it's an idle question. It sounds like Mace has a plan. Brows rising, Cody stares at Mace and asks,
Mace?
Mace just tips his head and keeps his silence, but he's being particularly nice to Fives, Cody realizes. Fives is wearing Mace's robes. Fives was targeted by the Vornskers, even when the creatures entirely ignored Cody and Kix. That's heck, he mutters, rubbing a hand over his eyes. Fives, Force sensitive. Now there's a headache waiting to happen. Mace isn't laughing at him in a way that is definitely laughing at him, and Cody doesn't appreciate it at all.